This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillig, filling in for John Hockenberry. We thank you so much for listening. And our top story again today, the acrimonious state of the relationship between the United States and its ally Israel. Secretary of State John Kerry delivered an impassioned and in a lot of ways a remarkable hour-long defense of the U.S.'s decision to abstain from a U.N. Security Council vote that condemned the construction of Israeli settlements in the West Bank. Kerry worried that the goal of two states, one Jewish, one Palestinian, living side by side, is slipping away.
Friends need to tell each other the hard truths, and friendships require mutual respect. This friend, the United States of America, that has done more to support Israel than any other country, cannot be true to our own values or even the stated democratic values of Israel if we allow a viable two-state solution to be destroyed before our own eyes.
Now, the strength of the U.S.-Israel relationship below this acrimony has been on full display. Earlier this year, the United States agreed to send a record $38 billion in military aid over the next decade. But Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu did not find signs of friendship in John Kerry's words, and he gave a harsh rebuttal about 45 minutes later.
What he did was to spend most of his speech blaming Israel for the lack of peace. The Jewish people have sought their place under the sun for 3,000 years, and we're not about to be swayed by mistaken policies that have caused great, great damage.
That was Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu yesterday. Senator George Mitchell has spent a great deal of time shuttling between the Americans and Benjamin Netanyahu. He's a former Democratic senator from Maine and a majority leader, and from 2009 until 2011, U.S. Special Envoy to the Middle East. Senator, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, John Kerry's main message yesterday was that the two-state solution is in jeopardy. Do you think that that's true?
Yes, I do. I think support for it is declining among Israelis, among Palestinians, and among some in the United States. And I agree with his central premise that the two-state solution is the only viable way to bring this difficult and historic conflict to an end in a way that meets the primary objective of both sides.
Well, how important are Jewish settlements to this whole puzzle? John Kerry himself said that they were just one of many, many factors, of course, keeping Israelis and Palestinians apart, but that continuing settlement activity is this catalyst, right, that's pushing a two-state solution toward the brink. Can you contextualize that?
Yes, it is just one of many issues. Indeed, not the most difficult. Jerusalem plainly will be the most difficult issue to resolve, although they're all very hard individually and collectively. With respect to settlements, the issue is that if enough settlements are established and enough settlers live in the West Bank, then there is no place for a Palestinian state in that area. Indeed, that's the stated objective of many of those who are part of the settler movement in Israel, and many are part of the government now. They state that as their objective, as a way of preventing a Palestinian state from ever being established on the West Bank. So it's an important issue, by means not the only issue, not even in the end the most important issue, but it's one that has to be dealt with.
So we heard some of Benjamin Netanyahu's harsh words in a response, not unfamiliar words for John Kerry and Obama. I think a lot of us might have expected the prime minister to say things like that. But let's step back from this a little bit, Senator. How does this compare with past periods of tension between Israel and the U.S. government? Does this feel like a blip to you, or the kind of moment that can lead to a backlash and a pendulum swing, in this case, a reaction to the right, where the United States and its allies in the government in Israel get more hawkish, much more hawkish, in reaction to the Obama years?
The United States-Israel relationship is strong and deep, and it exists between the peoples, and not just who happens to be head of the government at this time. And it will survive this disagreement. Indeed, this is less intense and less difficult and less fraught with danger than many that have occurred in the past. When President Eisenhower was in office, Israel joined with Britain and France to invade Egypt and seize the Suez Canal. And Eisenhower demanded they withdraw, wouldn't even talk to Prime Minister Ben-Gurion. Prime Minister Ben-Gurion asked, pleaded, could he speak with him? Eisenhower refused, and Eisenhower told him, conveyed the message, he wouldn't talk to him until after they withdrew, and Eisenhower threatened to go to the UN himself and introduced a resolution that would require Israel to withdraw. So that was an extremely difficult period. When Ronald Reagan presented his peace plan in 1982, Prime Minister Begin said it was the worst time of his life as prime minister, and he strongly attacked Reagan in terms far more harsh than what Netanyahu has used. Netanyahu didn't get along with President Clinton. So there's nothing new in all of this. These are two vibrant democracies. And while we're close friends, is it inevitable that there are differences in policy? I think the important thing is that we not lose sight of what the objective is here. That is to bring Israelis and Palestinians together in direct negotiations that will enable each to achieve its primary objective in the manner that I've described previously as set out by President George W. Bush.
You said that you think President Obama would have been wiser to prevent this recent resolution of Friday or veto it altogether, given the timing. One interpretation here is that the abstention allowed this moment for a warning flag that John Kerry could deliver, that Trump and Netanyahu may be entering an impossibly hawkish and conservative phase in the relationship and in the relationship with the Palestinians, at least in their view.
Well, unfortunately, I think the atmosphere created by the resolution made it much more difficult for Kerry's message to get through. And my concern was that since the principal objective of American policy is to bring the two sides together to negotiate these issues, they're now actually further apart. And I think both are taking courses that are destructive to their own interests. The Palestinians, as many of their officials have said in the last few days, feel emboldened by this and going to pursue further their policy of trying to achieve nationhood through international institutions. I don't think it can happen that way because that might lead to a nominal state, but a real state on the ground requires the participation and consent of Israel. Israel is the dominant power there. It occupies the territory. It controls the territory. So it doesn't make any difference how many resolutions you pass in distant capitals. They're not going to bring about a state on the ground for the Palestinians who live there. On the other hand, the Prime Minister of Israel, a country already isolated in the Muslim world, which comprises now one-fifth of the world's population, in a few decades will be a third of the population, is, in my judgment, increasing the isolation by carrying on against the countries who voted for this resolution. Britain, France, Spain, New Zealand, all natural allies of Israel. It is significant, I believe, that to the best of my knowledge, not one country in the world out of nearly 200 countries has come out in public support of Israel's position on this settlements resolution. And contrary to some of the criticism that has been made by President Obama's opponents in the United States and in Israel, there's nothing new in this resolution. In the Carter administration, in the Reagan administration, in the George H.W. Bush administration, there were resolutions passed which the United States either let pass or actually supported that are identical in language and import and impact to what is being said today. The argument that I've heard many commentators make, oh, this is something new, this is dramatic. It isn't. People should go back and read the other resolutions. Some of them use the exact words. So to make it out to be this dramatic change, I think, is a misimpression. Prime Minister Netanyahu is in a tough spot. Everybody involved is in a tough spot. But he's caught between an international community that is overwhelmingly opposed to continued settlement expansion in the West Bank, on the one hand, and his government is now dependent upon settler support and indeed includes people who are much more aggressive in terms of settlement than he is. And so he's like most political leaders. He's trying to preserve his position, so he's trying to make it seem as though if you're against settlements, you're against Israel. Well, as his opposition within Israel has pointed out, they don't think that's the case, that you can be against further settlement expansion and still be very much pro-Israel.
And what is the likely reaction on the part of Fatah, the Palestinian Authority, the Palestinian governments in the West Bank, Senator? If settlements continue or accelerate, and there is a strong signal that commitment to a two-state solution has waned. What, in your view, happens if enough Palestinians start to feel like political solutions don't hold any future for them?
Well, I fear that the Palestinian Authority will be unsustainable. The Palestinians are divided, just as the Israelis, on the question of a two-state solution. Fatah, the Palestinian Authority, has stated that it accepts Israel's existence. It opposes violence against Israelis. It agrees to abide by all prior agreements. Those positions are not the position of Hamas, the opposition among the Palestinians, which controls Gaza. But unfortunately for President Abbas and the Palestinian Authority, they've been saying this for 25 years and they haven't made much progress. Now, the two sides will argue over who is responsible for that lack of progress, each blaming the other. When I talked to Prime Minister Netanyahu, I urged him, now in a position of great strength militarily, economically, with the full backing of the United States, to reach out and make an agreement. And, of course, he was concerned about the possibility that a Palestinian state would fail. And it would be dangerous because of the proximity of the West Bank to Israel, and Hamas would take over. That's a risk. It's a valid concern. But my argument to him was the risk of the Palestinian Authority failing is greater in the absence of an agreement than it is if there were an agreement to which Israel would be a party and a participant and have some strong assurances with U.S. and international support. And if the Palestinian Authority collapses and Hamas takes over, then that is a nightmare for Israel, which would be required to engage in another full-scale occupation, be responsible for the population. More than half the Palestinian population needs food assistance and other forms of assistance. That's all now paid for by the UN, the United States, the European Union, and others. So I think that both sides ultimately will come to the realization that, difficult as getting an agreement is, and it will be extremely difficult and even more difficult to implement, the alternatives are worse for both sides. So they're better off getting together and trying to deal with these issues. And as the Palestinians, I also told President Abbas, look, the United States opposes settlements. Nine American presidents, five Republicans and four Democrats, over the 50 years of the life of the settlement enterprise, have opposed settlements. But the Israelis keep building them. So the best thing to do is to sit down with them, reach an agreement, agree on a border, and then you can build what you want on the Palestinian side, and the Israelis can build what they want on the Israeli side.
But, Senator, we have a new American president, before we let you go, who has sent strong signals that he is not anti-settlement and that his ambassador is not anti-settlement. And I wonder what your greatest realistic, unblinkered hope is for the Trump administration in this regard.
Well, I don't think that the views taken by Mr. Friedman as a private citizen will necessarily be those of the Trump administration. Obviously, as you said, Trump has sent signals of support for Israel, but he has not yet explicitly rejected the American policy of opposition to further settlement expansion. He has not sent a signal of supporting some of Mr. Friedman's other statements, reportedly supporting the possibility of Israeli annexation of the entire West Bank, and some of the other more controversial positions taken by various groups in Israel and in the United States. So I think there's a wait and see period. And I think once Mr. Trump gets into more detail on the complexity of the region, and I have to make an important point here. It should not be the case that people consider the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in isolation from the rest of the region. It exists within a region that is now extremely volatile, going through a great deal of turbulence and violence. It impacts on those external events, and those events in turn impact on the Israeli-Palestinian relationship. And a broader view is essential, and I hope Mr. Trump will take the time and get the advice to consider it within that context and consider how critically valuable it will be if Israelis and Palestinians can reach an agreement between themselves, as Israel has done with Egypt and has done with Jordan, both of which are now pillars of stability in the region and for Israel, that it will be very helpful if they can do that, because that would free up the Gulf Arab states and others in the region to normalize relations with Israel and enable them to act on their common interest of concern and opposition to Iran's drive to establish hegemony in that entire region.
Senator George Mitchell is the former U.S. Special Envoy for the Middle East between 2009 and 2011. Senator, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.